It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 30th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks for listening. I've got a full program for you this time, and that includes an interview with Mark Andrew Smith from Gladstone's School of World Conquerors, then also Pete Casaza from Big Planet Comics in College Park, Maryland. He's going to be talking about the first month of the New 52. And then, of course, I'll be joined by Ian Cullen and Gianluca Glazer to talk about the news and previews. Somewhere in there, I'll probably put my reviews of this week's comics, especially the New 52. So since we've got so much going on, let's get to it. Okay, I'm talking today with Mark Andrew Smith, known for many good things, including Pop Gun Comics and more recently, Gladstone's School for World Conquerors from Image. How are you doing today, Mark?
Yeah, I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, good. I appreciated the article you did, the interview we did with Nick Yanes on scifipulse.net, which is a website that we all work with. So once I saw that, I said, man, it'd be great to talk with him about the book because I like the book so much. To start with, how did you get started reading comics? Is this something you've always done or is this something that kind of has come recently?
When I was a kid, I was just always a huge reader. So I'd read The Hardy Boys, and then just about every book I get my hands on, I'd just be reading it. So I think it started off with 7-Elevens, actually, and just stopping in there when I was a kid, because they used to carry just every kind of comic. And then if you're just there in the store, you can just sit there and read them as a kid. Mm-hmm. So I'd always kind of be begging my folks for money, like, all the time, just to go buy comics, you know, and do chores to, like, go buy comics on mm-hmm. the stands from 7-Eleven. So that's how I discovered them.
Mm-hmm. I can relate to that.
I think I grew up at 7-Eleven.
So you read comics, obviously. Any favorite characters that you liked as you read comics? Ones you liked the best?
I've always been a huge Spider-Man fan, just because he's always, like, really funny and then easy to relate to. So when I was a kid, like, I really liked the McFarlane run on Spider-Man, and then Eric Larson also.
Oh, cool.
And then, yeah, I think just, you know, the stuff that you like as a kid, but then, of course, your tastes change, and then you like more, like, serious stuff or more artsy stuff as you get older.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get started actually creating comics?
I went to UC Santa Barbara, and I was a film studies major, and I'd always had an interest in drawing comics or, you know, or telling stories. So when I was there, I started a comic book club to start making comics, but, you know, it wasn't quite ready or in that spot yet. But my faculty advisor suggested this book called, yeah, you know, of course, Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I read that, and then it was just like fireworks went off and like light bulbs, and it just clicked, you know, just okay, comics are awesome and they can kind of do everything. So when I was in film school, I would just write all my film papers, like applying like film theory or auteur theory or independence and all that. I based it more around comic books from the Scott McCloud stuff. Mm-hmm. And then my faculty advisor was just really awesome and friends, because I would just start writing and then he would read my stuff and then give me feedback on it. And then a lot of friends were also in the screenwriting program as well. Mm-hmm. So it was in there where I just started to, like, cultivate ideas, and I started my first book there, The Amazing Joy Buzzards, just doodling in film class, and then I started to go to comic shows and meet as many people as I can and keep in touch with them, and then from there, just a career blossomed slowly but surely.
You know, what fascinates me, and I when I talk to comics creators, I keep running into this, and it just intrigues me, is that you have a film background, that you enjoyed comics, but you got into film in college, in your college experience. And I'm just so fascinated because I keep running into people that way. Would you recommend that if you want to get into comics that you actually go into film, or was just these things just naturally go together?
I think film can help a lot for comics because you just have such a wide encyclopedia of knowledge based on all the films that they assign to watch in there and that they have to write papers about. So you really do learn about story structure and everything else and, you know, how to, like, compose a shot and all the terminology. It's all there. And then screenwriting as well. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there is kind of a point when you are a film major and you just analyze film so much that you watch a film and you can't really enjoy it because you just know what's going to happen exactly next and you start to see the patterns in it. So you kind of get a little bit jaded and then, mm-hmm. you know, it goes away eventually and then you start enjoying films. But yeah, I'd highly recommend people want to get into comics to take a film class, maybe not be a film major, maybe be something that makes money, like a business major or a doctor or something, but take a film class. So that would definitely be good.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty cool. So the first book that you did is the one you mentioned already?
The Amazing Joy Buzzers was the first one that I did with Dan Hibb. And it follows a rock and roll band. It's like the biggest band in the world. And they travel around like Scooby-Doo, and they solve different mysteries. And they have a genie that's named El Campeón, but he's a Mexican luchador wrestling genie. So when they hold that magical amulet and then shout the magic words, "Go, El Campeón, go!" he spirals out and, you know, kicks everyone's butt and, like, helps out the band. Mm-hmm. But it's a kooky book. It's really, really weird and fun.
Mm-hmm. So after that, you moved into Image? You started work at Image?
That was the first work at Image was Amazing Joy Buzzards. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I think Pop Gun started up. Mm-hmm.
Now, Pop Gun, can you explain a little bit what that's about? I'm not exactly familiar with it.
Pop Gun is an anthology where the idea is kind of like a mixtape that you would make for someone to give to your girlfriend or a friend, just but it's for comics and the love of comic books. So it started off as another anthology, and then I brought my friend Joe Keating on board, and a light bulb clicked in his head, and he was like, "This is a lot bigger than the original, so we should just change the name," and we settled on Pop Gun. Mm-hmm. And it just spiraled and spiraled of us just inviting our favorite artists and people we knew about but other people didn't know about, because I think at that time I was just looking at art and all these artists all day on the internet and be like, I want to work with him. Mm-hmm. But it's a good training ground for a lot of artists that came out of it, and then mm-hmm. have like awesome careers right now. Some have been published before, but some it was their first like foray into comics and doing something, and now they're big names, I think.
Is that continuing on? I haven't seen one of those in a while.
Number 4 was the last one, and it won the Harvey Award. That was DJ Kirkbride and Adam P. Nave, and then Anthony Wu edited that one and did all the work for it. Wow. And then there's a fifth one planned, and Joe Keating's taking that one over. Mm-hmm. But I bet it's like another year off before it comes out.
Mm-hmm. Now, you did something called the New Brighton Archaeological Society, and I see that it was selected as a Best All-Ages Comic by MTV. Can you explain a little bit what that was about?
The New Brighton Archaeological Society, it started off as short stories in Pop Gun, just as warm-ups. And so I was working on that with Matthew Weldon and did the short stories just to get comfortable with the characters. And then from there, it turned into a book. But the idea is it's the children of the world's greatest adventurers, or Indiana Jones, and kind of a world where magic is real. And there's like these different gardens of magic that could seep and spill over into our world. Mm-hmm. These different books of magic and artifacts. Their parents get kind of like taken out just in the first scene. And they move to like their parents' childhood home, New Brighton Manor. But the woods there are just full of, all this fantastical stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they go and begin to explore more and more and kind of find out more about their parents' past, and then make up their mind to just take on and defeat their nemesis and finish their parents' work.
Mm. So book one came out, and I see that book two is supposed to come out in early 2012.
Yeah, it should be out January or February 2012. I think we're about 100 pages into it, and we probably have like 40 to go, and then just all the coloring to do, and then lettering. But this one's really cool, because with the first one, we kind of started slow and established the world and the tone and everything. And this new one, we had that all out of the way, so we could just leap into the action and... it's kind of like an X-Men comic, actually, but it takes place in like this classic type setting. But it's really fun.
Mm-hmm. It looks good. I haven't gotten that one. But the one that I have gotten, of course, is the one that I want to talk with you most about. And that's Gladstone School for World Conquerors, which I really enjoy. I just picked it up just because the name stuck out at me. And I said, I got to see what this is about. And so I started to read it, and I really like it. Can you give us a little background as to how this book got started?
It actually started about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I started working on it with Armand Villebert, but it started off just with the title. You know, I had the title stuck in my brain and just thought, okay, what if there was a school for world conquerors? What would the curriculum be like? Mm-hmm. I made like 20 different character ideas with brief bits about them, and then sent them on over to Armand. And from that, we picked just the core group of characters that we wanted in there. And, you know, began to develop them more and more. But with his art was fantastic. So, I mean, almost every character he, like, got perfect, and there weren't many revisions for him to do. So when he came aboard, the characters really developed a life of their own. But 4 years ago, we did, like, the first issue, and then we were working on it with the colorist, but they just didn't produce anything. So the book got majorly stalled for the past 4 years, and it was originally supposed to be a graphic novel. So we were actually kind of down in the dumps about it, and just be like, okay, can we try this as a monthly, just to motivate Armand and everyone else just to do it and make it on schedule? Because when you do, like, an original graphic novel, just the deadlines and the dates, they're just really abstract. So we figured, okay, this is, like, firstly a superhero book, so it'll probably do well in the direct market, and then you know, secondly, it's for kids and, like, a lot of fun, so you know, we think they'll enjoy it a lot.
Now, I see an influence of, like, the X-Men. You've got the school involved, which, of course, you have the mutant school and the X-Men. It's also got something of a Teen Titans feel to it as well. But, of course, the thing that fascinates me the most is, what made you decide to go from the other direction and talk about villains in a school?
I don't know. I've always thought the villains were more fun in the story, you know, and I was just curious, like, what does Doctor Doom or the Red Skull do in their free time? Because, you know, it's just kind of hilarious just thinking about that. So just from there, the idea started to grow and grow. And, like, what kind of curriculum would they teach? Because there is kind of an organized front of villains in comics. And in real life, well, not real life, but, you know, if the comic books were real, they'd all be talking to each other, and they'd kind of have rivalries between villains, and some villains would be friends and come from different places. So it's more about imagining, like, what would that world be like exactly? And then what would a curriculum be like in a school like that?
I guess Kid Nefarious is the leader of the group. He just discovered comics for himself, which I found funny. You
know? Yeah.
He's very busily, you know, he's in class, and he's sneaking comic books into books so he can read them.
And yeah, I think it kind of mirrors real life in a way, which is pretty funny. Or just, you know, teachers' opinions about comics when I was growing up. You know, they just take anything cool that you had and brought to school would just get locked in the teacher's secret drawer, and you get it back at the end of the year. So I think it makes sense that the comics are contraband. Yeah.
Now, the thing I'm fascinated too, and you did an interview with Nick Gaines on Sci-Fi Pulse, as I mentioned. One of the questions he was asking you about the fact that this book is available really to all ages. You know, there's nothing in there that a child really couldn't read who was exposed to comics. Did you go into that specifically wanting that to happen?
No, I think it was more like a happy accident, because we did write it for all ages, and then but I wrote it, like, a little bit more smart, and then adults started reading it, and it, because it was a superhero book. So by the time the second or third issue came out, that just based on what people were saying about it, you know, we just kept doing it that way. But it does operate like the Simpsons, where the kids watch it, and, you know, there's funny things, but then there's a lot of different jokes and you know, a whole other layer for adults to read, because you can hand it to a 3-year-old and they'd love it just because of the pictures and the characterizations and expressions. And then a 30-year-old can also enjoy it. So the thing I've heard that I really like is that, you know, it gets read twice. The parents buy it, they read it, and, you know, for enjoyment, and then they hand it on to their kids who read it, which is really good.
Very cool. Cool. You know, this is the kind of book I think could actually go into a school library. You know, I notice you've got a trade coming out very soon. My hope is that trade will find its way into some school library, so some of the librarians and also some of the students will get to read it.
Yeah, I hope it does. The trade's out November 16th, and then along with issue 7. So we hope that, you know, when the trade comes out and the issue on the same day, that the trade bumps up the issue sales. So somebody will buy the trade and then go on to singles. But I think it's just fair game for school libraries, and just across the board as being almost like a universally accepted comic book, or even a gateway comic book to get people who wouldn't normally read comic books to to be into them, because it's also very girl-friendly and girl-accessible as well. Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of fascinated by you say in the interview that Nick did that you want kids walking around with Gladstone's gear on eventually and maybe have like a Gladstone video game and things like that. Any chance that's going to happen? Are there things in the works that could make that take place?
They're working on it right now as far as just taking out to different studios and pitching it. So we'll see about that. But yeah, I think it's like a great property, and I'd like to see it, just see all this Ben 10 gear right now. And I'm envious. And, part of me just wants to make it Gladstone's gear. And then playing a video game with your characters would be probably the coolest thing ever, I think. And, manufacturing toys. I'm a huge fan of One Piece Animated, which is this Japanese animation. But it's a lot of fun. And in Asia, it's just huge as well. So they have the cool characters and the games and all that. So I would absolutely love that. And then I think it would just facilitate us doing comics, just on a more full-time basis.
Mm-hmm. That'd be cool. Now, the thing I'm curious about is you've got the trade coming out. Is this going to be an ongoing series, or is it going to, like, when you have enough for the trade, that's going to stop and then maybe start over again? Or is this going to be monthly?
We're going to do our best to go monthly because if you just stop for a month or 2 months or 3 months, then the audience just disappears and goes on to something else. So I think we have to do our best to go for a monthly. And my goal from setting out was just to do a book for a year and not miss a beat, or 2 years and not miss a beat. Hopefully, we're counting on just doing it for at least 2 years, and then eventually it's got to just bring us an income to do it, or make sense financially. But I think when the first trade comes out, it's just priced at $10. I think it'll do well and boost it for us and take off in its own way. So we'll try for monthly. Mm-hmm.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that, because a lot of times what I'm seeing, there's a lot of miniseries come out, and as great as they are, you're right, the first one comes out, and then there's a break, and then you get a trade, and some people pick it up. But then if they try to come back again, the second series never seems to quite have the oomph that the first one did. So I prefer to read a monthly comic. I'm not the kind of guy that waits for the trade. If there's something I like, I can't wait for it to come out and want to read that. But I do like to keep the trade of things that I particularly enjoy. So I'm planning to get in the trade for this. And I'm glad to hear that you actually like a monthly comic. That's starting to get to be a rare thing.
Yeah, I think there's an overemphasis on just original graphic novels. So I was doing it too. But as a creator, when you do the original graphic novels, their life isn't very long, because you work all year and then have a 180-page book come out, and it comes out and then maybe gets a month of press, or if you're working hard and just, keep the press going, maybe 3 months if you're lucky, which isn't good for doing a year of work. So I just was really committed to reconnecting with the monthly market, because it's a superhero kids book, and that's what the monthly market is firmly established around. So it was a good feeling to connect. And also just hearing the response from it's been great too, because every month it comes out, and then on Twitter, and Facebook, like we just hear people, giving us high fives and pats on the backs. And I wouldn't get that before. I put out books and not hear back from anyone. So this has been really, really rewarding, just going and doing the monthly.
Yeah, see, it's different now than it was before. You've got the chance for people to give you feedback. I think a lot of books would have been very different had people been able to respond and say to the creators, wow, we really like this, and sometimes I'll actually come up with an idea. I was talking with a guy who does Red Spike, and I posed a question to him, and he said, maybe we'll have to do that in an upcoming issue. And I was like, see, this is the kind of thing that's great. We get to talk to you guys and kind of get a sense as to what it is that you're communicating. We read the books and we get that stuff, but it's great to be able to say, gosh, we really like that.
Yeah, and it's great on our end too, because it motivates us and makes us do a ton better just hearing that. So we're like, okay, like they like this one, I'm gonna make this one next one like really, really, really good. So, and just I'll show them that they like that, this one's gonna be so great. So I think it has happened with Gladstones, where we'll show them, it's gonna be better and better.
Cool. Well, one of the, or I should say, the characters that I relate to the most are the Skull Brothers, because I'm one of a pair of twins. And so when I see the two of them interact on there, I relate to them, because I can see what they're doing. And I can see if my brother and I were in that situation, yeah, we could be doing some of that stuff.
Yeah, so they're like my favorite characters, because they're the most evil. And then they're also the most sympathetic, that they can relate to the most and just, feel for. So well, they're going about doing like their terrible stuff, you know, like they took off the mask in issue 3 and just revealed their faces, and you'd think they're like punk rockers underneath, but they're just clean cut, angelic looking kids, you know, that are just making the best out of a bad situation, or kind of like, you know, that's happened to them, and trying to work for their mother to free her and sort of break the armistice. But yeah, they're my favorites. I think everyone likes the Skulls the most.
Yeah. I just have to ask, are these characters based on people you know in real life? They live in your mind. How does this work, you know, as far as giving them individual personalities?
Actually, with this book, no one is based on anyone I know in real life. With the New Brighton Archaeological Society, the kids are actually my brothers and my nieces. So they're based on that and drawn, you know, like them and their personalities. So that book was really easy to write. With this, it's just about more so character interaction and I guess just, you know, just people's different roles within the group. So Kid Nefarious, he's a legacy. So he's always trying to live up to like his parents' level, mm-hmm. but his parents have had like 30 or 40 years to do what they've done, but he just wants it instantaneously. So he's more like maniacal and kind of has like insecurity issues, I suppose. And then Martian Jones is kind of supportive, but he, you know, is just helping out Kid Nefarious. And he doesn't want to go over the line, but he kind of does want to secretly become as good as or, you know, up to Kid Nefarious's level. Mm-hmm. And then Mummy Girl and Ghost Girl are just kind of cute girls who happen to be dead. And, you know, making the best out of it. And so they're kind of insecure with their appearance or like fitting in, but they're a pretty good team and like really warm-hearted and geeky also, which is really fun.
You know, one of the things I really like about the characters, it reminds me very much of the show Alphas, and I know this is completely unrelated, but instead of being like the X-Men and the Teen Titans that are totally well-adjusted, they can work well together, they're just perfect characters. But when you get to Gladstones, they're very imperfect characters. And I find that a lot more endearing. It's just like the show Alphas on Sci-Fi. If you've ever seen that, they have powers, but they're also flawed in the sense that they're not necessarily heroic in the Superman sense of the word. And that's one of the things I like about the book. Was that something you really wanted to make sure happened?
I think just doing the other side of villains, they're just more colorful in the way that they express their personality. And then they're more selfish also, you know, just coming from that, like the side of villainy. Like that's kind of what it stems from, is just selfishness and ego. Mm-hmm. So they all have like that sense of like imperfection. And I think the most kind of more closer to perfect is Mummy Girl and Ghost Girl. But everyone else is just kind of flawed and... you know, they see this stuff on TV and then they try to emulate or mimic it with what their parents have done. And I think it kind of comes, part of it, they're playing like a character and just trying to fill shoes. And then part of it is like how they actually are.
Mm-hmm. It's very cool. Nick says one thing I really like, and I'm going to quote him on this. He said, there's only two types of people in the world, those who have read the comic and those who and enjoy it, and those who haven't had the chance to read it yet. Because if they get to read it, they would also enjoy it. Because everybody I know
–
yeah, everybody who's read the book I know really enjoys it. And so I just think you guys have done a great job of making a very relatable and enjoyable comic.
Thank you. Yeah, with issue 7, we're going to bring in like two new characters, and then the action kind of escalates. But issue 6 is going to be a big one next month, and you guys will see what happens.
Okay.
But we kind of like built up a lot of stuff, and just yeah, what happens next month is going to be really exciting.
Okay, good.
And, just everyone's going to be like, ooh, and now we got to like kind of like deal with another set of things. So the action's picking up more and more.
Yeah, I love a good surprise. Now, I always tell people, don't spoil it for me because I want to enjoy it when I read it. So I'll tell you the same thing. I can't wait to read it now. Now you got me all jazzed to read the next issue. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I like doing interviews with more issues out, because when it first started, I can't give any spoilers. So it's just like, this is a school for supervillains, and that's all I can tell you. And now, you know, more stuff has happened. So I'm like able to talk about, you know, and just there's like a shared sense of things to talk to about someone who enjoys the book, has read the book. So that's really awesome to just be, you know, almost have the first trade wrapped up and then, you know, actually be able to talk more in depth about it. So the interviews are getting more fun and a lot better, I think. And I'm enjoying myself a lot more.
Well, good. That's great, because I enjoy the book. Every month I go through to make sure I'm getting that comic, you know, from Image, because I really, it started off really well and it just has grabbed me from the start, and I just enjoy it every month. So I'm glad it's coming out every month. So I'm very happy with it.
Thank you.
As far as other projects, do you have any other projects that you're working on that we should be aware of?
I'm working on two or three, but I kind of scaled back because, you know, I thought, oh, Last Zone is going to be easy. But it's pretty meticulous to do the dialogue and the lettering script. So those slow me down. And then I think I'll have two new things out next year. One's called Kaiju Destroyer. And it's about kind of like, what if the world were just overrun with kaiju, giant Godzilla-like monsters. And there's these emperors who would like control them in the past. And there's this huge stone samurai guy that's like a normal-sized person in real life who just goes around cleaning up kaiju from country to country. Mm-hmm. And each issue, he battles a new giant monster. But, you know, there's some overall purpose to everything in there. And I'm doing it with Tim Odland. And it's pretty fun. But he has to draw, like, huge cities every month and so much detail. So I think once we have six issues done, then we'll start to release it and, you know, keep it out. But the goal is for next year, around the spring, to get it done.
Okay. Sounds great. I'm looking forward to that. I'll have to make sure I get those because, like I said, Gladstones is a must-read every month for me, so I like that very much. Okay, Mark, I appreciate talking with you. It was great fun, and I look forward to getting your books in the month ahead, and we'll keep abreast of what you're making, so I appreciate that very much.
Thank you, Wayne.
Together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review,
dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
Let's talk about this week's comics, the last week of September. That means the final week of the New 52's first month. My favorite book of the week was Aquaman. Of course, Geoff Johns is in charge, and he's doing a lot of interesting things with the King of the Seven Seas. Aquaman and Mira decide to live on dry land for a change, which is going to make some interesting things happening when a former king decides to live with the rest of us. That should be a lot of fun. He's got armor, of course, and things bounce off of him, and they even address how he was called the lamest superhero ever in The Big Bang Theory on CBS. So, Mr. Johns has got the book off to a flying start, which I really like. Next was the Teen Titans number one. It's an interesting blend between Batman's current and previous universe with a new Superboy. That Tim Drake's relationship with Connor Kent never existed in here. It's an interesting story. It's off to an interesting start. We'll see what happens with it. It's not Marv Wolfman and George Perez, but it's still good stuff. So I would definitely give it a try. Other books that came out this week include The Flash number one, which was really good. I've always liked the Flash character, and I never understand why he doesn't do as well as he should. Then I enjoyed Superman, although some people on the internet didn't seem to like it as much as I did. I liked it. Then Batman the Dark Knight is back with Paul Jenkins helping David Finch by providing some of the writing. It's an interesting perspective compared to the other Batman books. The Savage Hawkman. I always like winged characters, and it's an interesting take on it, so I'm going to be curious to see how that goes forward. Justice League Dark brings a lot of the magical and mystical characters into one group. Green Lantern New Guardians features Kyle Rayner as the main ringslinger, although we get all different colors represented by the end of the issue. All-Star Western brings Jonah Hex into Gotham City, and we get to see the Arkham and Cobblepot families existed even that far back in the Old West, so pretty interesting writing by Palmiotti and Gray, as usual. The Fury of Firestorm has three heroes in it, and you'll be interested to see which ones they are. I was fascinated by it. Gail Simone's in it, and some people didn't seem to like it, but it's the first issue when they're just getting started, so I'll be curious to see where she takes us. Blackhawks focuses on a team of mostly non-powered human adventurers, and it's kind of an interesting take on the genre, so I'll be curious to see where we go with that. iVampire and Voodoo were the ones that I want to reserve judgment on until we get to see where they're going with those books. So, interesting stuff. Other books that are out, Frank Miller's Holy Terror came out, Doctor Who ongoing
Ongoing Volume 2, Number 9, Avengers Academy 19, and Iron Man 2.0 from Marvel, as well as Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, Number 1 of 6. Always liked those books. Wolf comes out from Atlas Comics, as well as The Sixth Gun from Oni Press. Incorruptible Number 22 sets up the confrontation that had to happen between Incorruptible and Irredeemable, so you're going to like those books. And those are the books that came out this week.
I'm talking today with Peter Casaza. I get that right?
Yep, that is correct.
Great, great. From Big Planet Comics on Route 1 in College Park, Maryland. And we're just curious to ask you today about the new 52 from DC. What was your impression when you first heard about it? What kinds of things did you think about when you heard it?
Well, when I first heard the rumor that they were going to restart all their series at number one, I didn't believe it. I was like, no, that can't be right. There's no way. And then I heard increasing rumors about it, and I'm like, well, there'll be a lot of titles, but it won't be action and detective. Mm-hmm. And so I actually went to a meeting. DC Comics hosted a bunch of retailer meetings they had around the country.
Uh-huh.
And they said, no, we mean every title, every character. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a problem. People are going to be really, really upset.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually did a really good job of convincing us, the retailers, that this is going to be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out they were right. It's been a huge success in every possible way. So I'm very happy with it.
Mm-hmm. I was reading some places where some people were saying even the week before, people thought it was still going to flame out spectacularly. And the interesting thing is that when Justice League number one hit, people started to show up in stores that hadn't been to a comic book store before or hadn't been seen for a long time anyway. Did you experience that when the new 52 started to come out?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was still very scary. Even though I went to a meeting and was pretty positive about it, I was like, I don't know how many I'm going to order. I don't know how many people are going to show up. And and 2 weeks before it launched, we've had a lot of people talking about it, but we hadn't seen a lot of people come into the store or gotten that many phone calls. We got a few. But I'll tell you, about 7 days before Justice League came out, we started having a lot of people start showing up. Like, hey, when is this happening? When can I get it? The mainstream media started picking up on it. I'm like, uh-oh, this looks like it could be big.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, Justice League came out at 31st, and I had 5 people outside the door before I opened on Wednesday morning.
Really?
So, and it's only grown since then.
Really?
It definitely had a slow start. I would say in the last 2 weeks, I've seen a ton more people come in.
Mm-hmm.
When it first started, the first week or so, I had people who hadn't been in the store in 2 years. I recognized them immediately, and I hadn't seen them in a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm getting tons of people I've never seen before ever,
mm-hmm.
and I've had a lot of people start signing up as regular box holders mostly for the new 52. They're like, well, I've always wanted to do this, or I've been out of comics for 5 years, and this is a perfect way to get back into comics, and it's worked tremendously well.
Well, as far as the books go, which one has been the one that surprised you the most that you liked? And which one do you think was the one that surprised you the most on the other direction that you didn't like?
I liked Animal Man a lot. I thought Animal Man was fantastic. I thought it could be good, but it was even better.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with Action Comics. I thought Action Comics would be interesting, but I really liked that a lot. I thought those two were by far the strongest standouts, and they were very good.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a couple clunkers. Hawk and Dove I didn't think was going to be very good, and it was even more disappointing than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
A few others I didn't like personally, but
mm-hmm.
some other people did. I didn't much care for the Firestorm comic or the Captain Atom one, but then I talked to people who actually did enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
So it really comes down to a matter of taste for a lot of the comics, what you like and what you're expecting and what you received. I was a little disappointed in the first Justice League issue,
mm-hmm.
just because it didn't have a lot of story to it. I was a little disappointed out of that,
mm-hmm.
but I think that'll be good overall over time.
Mm-hmm. So now the first month you were able to return things, is my understanding. But from here on out, I don't think you're able, are you? Or is that something?
Well, it's just been a huge hit, and
mm-hmm.
as expected, most retailers underordered,
mm-hmm.
and DC Comics actually underprinted. Not that it's their fault, but this has been such a huge hit, more so than anyone anticipated, that they've actually extended returnability. they want comic stores to order more, so they're supposed to be the first two issues, but now I think it's going to be the first three or four issues where you can return extras.
Wow.
But I don't think anyone's really going to be returning any, because most stores need issues. The first printings of all number one sold out, the second printings of number one seem like they're going to sell out pretty quick, and a lot of them are going to a third and fourth printing, so I think there'll be very, very few returns out there.
Are you finding that the second and third printings are selling as well as the first?
Well, they haven't quite come out yet. We've gotten the Justice League ones have done very well, and the Batgirl ones we just got this past week, they look like they're going to sell pretty well too. The bulk of the second printings will start coming out this week, and I have a feeling a lot of people who didn't hear about it or didn't get in the first two or three weeks have now heard about it and will be coming in. So I expect even more people to be coming in. As many new people as we've had, I expect even more over the next 4 weeks. So, yeah, I expect everything DC does to sell out for at least a while. We'll see, you know, issue three and four, I don't know, but I think it's possible. So it'll be real interesting to see.
So have you seen that any of the other comics have sold, picked up as well? You know, have the Marvel books sold a little more than usual? Some of the Boom comics and things like that. Have any of those picked up, or have they been sort of lost in the shuffle, everyone after the DC books?
Well, the first 2 weeks, Marvel didn't actually put out a lot of comics the first 2 weeks of September.
Mm-hmm.
The second 2 weeks, they put out a lot more, and I saw a lot of their books do really well. Because once you get people into the store, they're going to see X-Men, they're going to see something else. If they're already spending money, they're more willing to give it a try. So I definitely think, like, Ultimate Spider-Man number one came out, since it was a number one. The same time DC was doing number ones, I think that definitely helped sales on that book with the DC spillover. I've seen actually trade book sales fall off a little bit in September. More people were focusing on individual comics. But I think overall, anytime you get more people to come into a comic store, it helps every publisher.
As far as September goes, how was your September comparatively? I hear a lot of people saying that this is like a record-setting September for people.
You know, sales have been down in comic book stores over the last 2 years pretty dramatically, and this is probably the best month, standout month we've had in 2 years. It really has done much better, especially for new comic books. Like I said earlier, trade book sales weren't that great this month, but new comic sales overall were through the roof. And we're up, you know, thousands of dollars compared to previous months this year in comic book sales. And I haven't looked up the numbers yet, but significantly up over last September, that's for sure. It's probably been the best month we've had in 2 years.
Wow.
And really hoping that it continues through October, November. That's for sure.
Because that's my next question is, I mean, moving forward, you know, this is great for September. It's great for a one-time deal with number ones. I'm surprised, actually, that the collectability is still going on because of the digital comics and things like that. I was pretty much expecting that people wouldn't be worried about paper copies, but apparently there are still a lot of people interested in collecting number ones.
There's still a huge appeal to physically having something in your hand and taking it home with you. There's still a huge draw. I was surprised, too, that DC Comics has reported that digital sales of their new issues have been good, but not spectacular. The paper comics have far exceeded their expectations, and there's much higher interest in the paper comics than the digital versions. Digital versions have done well, but they haven't blown the doors off the way paper have. So there's still this childhood pleasure about holding, you know, a first printing of a new comic that you really enjoy and that you save and hold on to. So that's definitely been a visceral kind of reaction to this, which is great for everyone, I think.
Now, as far as moving forward goes, if you have to guess, and I realize it's just a guess, how would you expect things to go forward, like in October and November? Do you think that the sales will continue? Do you think it'll fall off some? What do you think is going to happen, or what do you think is likely to happen?
It's hard to say, you know, predicting the future, but some of the books weren't that good and didn't have, you know, a huge reaction to them. So I expect the sales in those books to definitely level off and slow down. But the books that are good, I actually expect those sales to continue to grow. A lot of times if a book is really good, you'll still sell issues 2 and 3 and 4. You'll be selling number ones to people who just are hearing about how good these are. You'll be selling number twos. So actually, sales could really increase on all issues to the better titles over the next 3 months. I'm certainly ordering strongly on the good titles. The ones I'm not as sure about, I'll order a little bit more conservative on and just see what happens. But if it's well-written and well-drawn, I can pretty much guarantee an increasing sales level over the next couple of months.
Wow. So that's good news for you and your store.
Yeah, it's great news. I mean, really, the hardest part for the last, 6 months is getting people to come into the store and spend a little bit of money. Those two things have been very difficult. People will come in, they'll look, they'll buy one small thing, or maybe they're so busy they can't even tempt themselves, or, so short on cash they can't even come in. So this is giving people a reason to come into the stores really helps everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very happy with what's happened in the past month.
Okay, well, why don't you go ahead and give the information for your store, and you have a podcast too. Why don't you go ahead and give us that so that people can go to iTunes and get your podcast?
Sure. The store I run is Big Planet Comics of College Park in Maryland. Mm-hmm. You can check our website, which is bigplanetcomics.com. We have 4 stores in the area, in the Washington, D.C. area. And we have also a podcast for Big Planet Comics, which is on iTunes and on our website. Bigplanetcomics.com is a great site. We have a lot of updates. And we're also on Facebook. So we're just a group of guys who love comic books, and we try to do everything we can to encourage people to read.
One of the things I enjoy when I get there is that you have folks who recommend comics based on what you like already. You might try this. You might try that. And I find that very helpful because as much as I invest my time and my money in comics, I struggle to find good things. And so that's one of the things I always appreciate about your staff is that they're helpful in pointing me in directions that I would like to go if I knew about it. So I appreciate that a lot.
Well, that's great to hear, Wayne, and that's something we specialize in, is reading everything that comes in our door, telling people what it's about, and once we get to know what you're interested in, try to direct you to stuff like that. I mean, that's really our job, is to know what we're carrying and point you to the good stuff, or at least it's the stuff we think is good or stuff that we think you might like. It's hard to do, but we think it's really important to why we're there. So.
Well, I appreciate it a lot. I wish more stores did that, to be honest. But,
yeah.
It
would be nice.
So many places is people just aren't interested in the product they sell, and I just find that unusual. But
It's unfortunate when people only read the stuff they like and they don't know anything about stuff they haven't tried, even though it's in their store. So,
well, thanks, Peter. We'll look forward to talking with you in the future. I might check up and see how things are doing in a couple of months.
That'd be great, Wayne. I always love talking about comics, especially when things are going really well.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Wayne. Take care.
Okay, time for this week's news and previews, and with me as always is Ian Cullen. How are you, Ian?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. And how are you, Gianluca Glazer?
I'm doing spiffy.
Okay.
Spiffy.
Oh, yes. Right. We're getting descriptive as we go along.
Yes. I'm wearing too tight. Sorry about that, folks.
Well, New York Times printed an article. I thought we would start with this about it says so far sales for the new DC comics are super. And they go in and they discuss what we've talked about, is that this was a really risky gambit on DC's part. Had they not been successful, they would have alienated longtime readers and sent what they call an already declining industry into a tailspin. I don't know if that was exactly true, but it's interesting to see that. They also talked about how some of the books are drawing people in. They refer to different stores than the people from Newsarama do. And so what they talked about, and the guy, a gentleman from San Francisco, was saying how they thought they were concerned whether it'd actually be an industry in a couple of years. And then they talked to somebody on the East Coast, the gentleman who runs Midtown Comics in Manhattan. He says, and I like the quote, "I have to say that DC's diabolical plan is working for now." So I just wondered, but now that we've come to the end of the 4 weeks, I mean, what all are your impressions of going? I'll start with Ian this time. What's your impression about how this New 52 is doing?
Well, from my contact with my own comic store in Leeds, they can't sell enough of them. As in, they want more comics. So, I mean, they sold out with a very unpopular Green Arrow in its first weekend. When I rang up to ask about whether my Action Comics issue number 1 was in, I was lucky that they managed to put it in the box because it was sold out.
This is the second printing, right?
No, I've got the first printing.
Oh, okay.
It was sold out. The Detective Comics again sold out. So
Well, according to what's been coming out of Newsarama, everything is sold out. I mean, every book that DC did this month is sold out. I was just thinking, Ian, you could always tell him, you know, if the guy in Leeds wants to get a copy of Green Arrow first printing, you could always sell it back to him and send. He could sell it. But it's interesting because a lot of people are getting the same impression that everybody else seems to be doing. You know, initially it was a real big gamble. The one guy, another quote that comes out of the New York Times was that a week before the New 52 was about to hit, he was still convinced it was going to crash and burn. And I think a lot of people were very doubtful about this until things have started. And I'm just amazed at it. And I talk to people who run stores a lot. In fact, in this podcast, I have an interview with a gentleman who runs a local store. And he's got some interesting things to say. Now, the thing that I wanted to see, what about you, John Luca? Now that we've gone 4 weeks into this, or 5 weeks, I guess, if you want to include Justice League, I mean, what's your impression about how it's going?
Oh, I think it's gone marvelously well. I mean, they've put together some really interesting creative teams with each title to where, yeah, there's just a general interest. And if you're not like a comics fan, you know, DC has done a lot to get the word out about how important this is. And, you know, it's definitely worked. You know, I recently picked up Batwoman second printing. And that book, I know at Golden Apple, is going to, you know, sell out pretty soon. And, you know, you have a third printing on the way coming out in a couple of weeks along with issue two.
Now, a bit of news that happened over the past week was that Batman number one has joined that lofty over 200,000 sales mark. And, of course, last week when I got to talk with Scott Snyder about all Batman stuff, he was happy it got over 100,000. So, we're going to see more and more of these things over time, I think, continue up. But before we move off of the subject, though, I'd be curious to think, now that we're into going to be starting the second month, John Luca, what do you think is going to happen in the second month? Sales drops?
I'm glad you brought this up.
Okay.
No, I'm glad you brought this up because this was a question I was going to pose. You know, it's really curious to see what's going to happen in the second month. You're going to have second and third printings come out during this month to coincide with the release of issue twos. And I'm just kind of curious to see what titles are going to continue. You know, these numbers are based on, you know, retailers ordering in advance, 2 months in advance. So, you know, I'm just kind of curious to see if there's going to be the same level of kind of sellouts, because retailers are going to order less of an issue too. And usually there's like a significant drop. And in the case of this being a mega event, you know, maybe the drop could have been 40%, you know, because retailers think, oh, yeah, everyone's going to grab the issue ones, but only the real comic fans are going to stick around for like the issue twos. And that's probably the mindset that was happening 2 months prior to October. But now I'm just kind of curious to see if we're going to have the same level of second printing sellouts and things of that nature. Now, for the first month here in September, there's been at least 6 books that have cracked 100,000. Mm-hmm. And besides Batman, there's been, I think, at least a couple other books that cracked the 200,000 range. Mm-hmm. And I'm very curious to see, you know, overall what the issue twos of these, you know, books are going to be. Did the retailers underorder, and are the numbers going to be significantly lower, you know, with sellouts and second printings and third printings on the way? Or were retailers, you know, lofty in their ordering, like some of them were with the issue ones? And are we going to see like a small 20% drop maybe, you know? It's going to be curious just to see even the September numbers, the 300 top comics, to see kind of who gets pushed out, you know, in all this, because you're going to have 52 comics taking, you know, quite a high spot, you know, in the charts.
Of course, they're going to have new comics coming out as well. In the 52 was just some launch issues, but is it going to be a few new DC titles coming out this month?
Yeah, there's a Penguin miniseries, and there's some other ones too. I think a Huntress is coming out as well. So there's more new ones coming out. It's not just going to be the same 52.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do you think, Ian? What's your impression of how the first month has gone for them?
Well, you know, by the sounds of it and everything I've read and from discussions that I've had, they seem to have done really, really well. And I think it stands them in good stead, you know, if they can, you know, continue along the same theme. Even if they lose 20%, it's only a 20% drop. It's significantly more comics that they're pushing and selling than they were before the event.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ian, what if you had to
40% dropped?
Right, right. Ian, if you had to guess, how do you think that October is going to go? Are we going to see a significant drop? If so, do you want to guess how what percentage?
I wouldn't want to play that game. it's a fool's game.
Okay, well, maybe I can I talk you into that, Jean-Luc?
There's obviously going to be a drop. I mean, you're not going to have like three titles breaking 200,000, you know, and you're not going to have probably six titles breaking 100,000. But it's possible you still are going to have one or two titles breaking that 100,000.
Mm-hmm. See, it fascinates me because going forward, you know, the guy that I regularly buy from at the main place, he was worried that he's going to end up with a lot of number two issues. In number one, he was able to return. Now he's upped his orders. Will October be as kind to him as September has been? And, you know, again, DC still has to prove itself on going the long run. So I'm going to be fascinated to see how this all goes. But it turned out more spectacular than DC could have ever hoped for, in my opinion. So it's interesting.
Yeah, big success.
All right. Ian, have you got any news for us?
I've got a little bit of news, actually. Dark Horse have actually unveiled their programming schedule for New York Comic Con in 2011. And here's pretty much how it goes. On Friday, October 14th, from 1:30 to 2:30, in room 1A15, you're going to have Dark Horse Presents, which is Dark Horse's senior managing editor Scott Angie, and director of public relations Jeremy Aitkins, and they're basically looking at what the publisher has on tap for the coming year, in addition to news about all of the hot new four titles like Orchid, The Strain, and House of Knights, and stuff like that. And then on Saturday, October 15th at 11 a.m. In room 1A15, you've got the Buffy and Angel Presents Dark Horse Does Vampires Right, which is basically talking about their Buffy and Angel comics. And then at 4 p.m. On the same day in room 1A24, you have Dark Horse and BioWare present Mapping the Mass Effect Universe, which is basically a comic book adaptation of a very, very popular, hugely successful video game franchise. Also on the Saturday in room 1A03, you've got Dark Horse Spotlight Mike Mignola, which is basically about the Hellboy creator and the Hellboy universe. And in room 1A24, and these are on the Sunday, sorry, I've skipped a beat here, you've got Creepy and Eerie or Halloween Eve edition, which is discusses Dark Horse's creepy series, the classic age of the Warren Creepy and Eerie magazines, and all the exciting things coming up in the creepy universe, with a bone-chilling panel which includes Louise Simonson, Joe Harris, The Curse from Creepy 1 through 3, and a number of other special guests, moderated by new comic companies Twin Engines, Dan Braun, Creepy, and Josh Braun, A History of Violence. Plus, there will be creepy trivia questions with swag and prizes.
Oh, boy.
Creepy.
Oh, there you go.
Creepy.
Hang on, Jim Steranko. I'm surprised. You know, I was hoping maybe they do something to promote Red Tide, that book he's releasing through Dark Horse.
Well, there's not. I guess not. There's nothing on there.
Okay. That's a shame.
But they did say that check the Dark Horse blog for further information on further panels. Okay. This is just basically a press release that they sent out in the week.
Cool. Ah, gotcha.
Anything else you got there, Ian?
Well, this isn't really comics as such, but Teen Wolf Tiger Pulsey and Dingan O'Brien are going to be appearing at the London Comic Con, which takes place sometime in October. It's Saturday 29th and Sunday 30th of October this year. I was just reading a bit further down the page, and they're saying that this Comic Con's in London coming up next year, on 25th through 27th of May and 26th through 28th of October. But this one is going to be on the 29th and the 30th of October. So if you're a comic book fan, but you also happen to be a fan of the new Teen Wolf, get your asses over to London Comic Con.
Gotcha.
They'll let mules in all the time.
You know, they're howling their way to the Comic Con.
Wow.
Okay, Gianluca, what news have you got for us?
Oh, sure. Speaking of New York Comic Con and Comic Cons in general, New York Comic Con has announced that they've sold out their exhibitor space at the show. Mm. And I believe they've also sold out of their Saturday passes for the regular fans that come in.
Cool.
So that's pretty interesting. I'm going to be there at the show.
You and me both.
You know, along with some of the creators.
Yeah.
Just the day before, though, and you're invited, Wayne, to come by, we're having a pre-New York Comic Con party at Jim Hanley's Universe. It's going to be on Wednesday, October 12th, and it starts at 6:30 p.m. Jim Hanley's Universe is located just across from the Empire State Building. Mm-hmm. So really cool area to be at.
I've been at that building.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yes, I like it. We got Ben McCool, who does Pigs, that came out recently through Image Comics and Choker. Nathan Edmondson, who works on Who is Jake Ellis. Chris and Shane Houghton, who work on Reed Gunther. Edwin Hung, who works on Skull Kickers. Richard Starkings, probably most well-known for Elephant Men. Charles Sewell, who does a book called 27. It's released through Image Comics. Jeff Kahn, who's the writer for Red Spike. We got Owen Wiseman, the writer for Samurai's Blood, and David Baxter, the writer for Marksman. And those three titles are released through Ben Arroyo Publishing and Image. And then finally, Chris Giarrusso. He is well known for doing a book on an Image called G-Man. So, you know, there'd probably be more people joining in as the days go by. Definitely keep your eye out on the Jim Hanley Universe page regarding that. And guess what? The first 50 people who come in to buy a comic from any of the attending creators will receive a free copy of the September 2011 edition of Heavy Metal Magazine. This is a magazine that focuses on Imaginary Friends Studios. It's a really cool issue, and you can get it free. We'll also have drinks and snacks there, too.
Cool. Cool.
That was my pitch on that.
Nothing like a book full of scantily clad half-naked women.
And there are in this issue, too.
Two.
Three. in other news, some interesting stuff. You know, we were talking about DC. It was announced that George Perez is leaving Superman with issue number 6.
Yeah.
He's being replaced by Keith Giffen and Dan Jurgen. So pretty interesting. You know, when the original 52 was announced, Keith Giffen was just doing one title, mm-hmm. and it was OMAC, mm-hmm. Dan Didio, and probably one of the least appealing books of the 52. Mm-hmm. And in a short period of time, now he's going to be taking over Green Arrow, and then he's also going to be taking over Superman. Mm-hmm. So in future news, Superman number 7 and Green Arrow number 5 are horrendously late.
My goodness.
No idea when scripts will come in.
In past news, Superman 4, The Quest for Peace sucked.
Just playing, Keith. Mm. If Keith Giffen happens to listen to that. Mm. I love Keith very much. In other news, interesting retailer news here. Game of Thrones, which Dynamite has got the license to release. It's also a very popular HBO series now.
And they've got a game out. There's a PC game out coming
out. And now there's a game out. But for the comic book by Dynamite, Games of Thrones got a very prominent display in Barnes & Noble's across the U.S. Very interesting deal that I guess Dynamite or maybe the Games of Thrones license holders did with Barnes & Noble's. But it kind of puts a focus, you know, on comic books in general. And it's kind of good to see this kind of thing go to a book that, even though it's a licensed title, you know, but it's still, you know, Dynamite getting kind of major publicity and exposure. In other retail news, Amazon has released the Kindle Fire, their newest thing for reading graphic novels now.
Yeah, I want one, but they're not releasing it in the UK until next year.
Ah.
So the only way I can get hold of it is if I was to get hold of one from the US, and then I'd have to, you know, look at the mains adapter problem.
Well, to help sell the new Kindle Fire, Amazon has said to give a low price on the Watchmen graphic novel. And there may be other kind of deals in place like that with other DC titles, too, in the near future. So you never know. So it's kind of getting aggressive there, Amazon really pushing this Kindle, you know.
They're actually saying that it could actually take on Apple's iPad because basically the reason Apple got the market cornered is basically because they have iTunes and the platform through which to sell music and videos, and it's the same deal with Amazon. They have the platform. You know, you can get streaming movies through Amazon. You can get, you know, books and DVDs and stuff like that. So, you know, Amazon have the same advantage as, you know, as all these other song account outlets.
You know, we haven't heard from DC what their digital sales have been yet. If either of you guys hear anything about that, you know, let me know, because I'm fascinated by that. I mean, obviously the paper copies are doing very well. I'm just curious to know how the digital version's done as well. Anyway, just a thought.
Sure. And speaking of that, I know Marvel is touting like the sales of Ultimate Spider-Man, mm-hmm. digital sales having broken records, but they don't give any specifics. So, you know. Kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. In other news, Arkea has released a 20-page preview of Jim Henson's Tale of Sand graphic novel. I can't wait for this to come out. This was, I guess, intended to be a film that never got made. Mm-hmm. And so Arkea, which has been doing other kind of Jim Henson-related stuff, mm-hmm. like The Dark Crystal, which hopefully comes out soon.
Yeah.
So they have the Jim Henson's Tale of Sand.
Mm-hmm.
And in news that's probably dated by the time you listen to this, on October 2nd, the West Hollywood Book Fair happened, and Sam Sakar, the creator and writer of The Vault from Image Comics,
very good,
spoke at the Comics to Film and Back, I think is the name of the panel. But it was at 4 p.m., and he spoke about it, and it went really well.
He sounded great. Oh, man, he was wonderful.
He sounded great, and he did this great signing afterwards at the Comic Bug booth. So.
You know, we're going to have to get Sam on the show to do best and the worst of the week with us, maybe.
Oh, I bet he'd love to do that.
That'd be fun.
The Vault will always be the best.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That Sam Sakar on the best and worst of the week. Well, personally, yes. I think The Vault was very good.
Okay, anything else you got?
That's it for me. I know Ape Expo is going on now as we speak. Mm-hmm. And it has passed by the time the people have listened to this recording. So hopefully there'll be maybe some news on that next week.
Okay. So now we're on to previews. What's due out this week? Because I think Action Issue 2 will be out this week, won't it?
Yeah, let me go down the list here because there's some interesting stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Action Comics number 2 is coming out. Interestingly enough, a bunch of the books of issue number 2, the second printings of the first issue are going to arrive. So if you want to catch up on 1 and 2, it's going to be a good thing. And I start with Animal Man number 1 and 2 will be out. The second printing of number 1 and issue number 2, which, by the way, there's supposed to be a crossover between Animal Man and Swamp Thing in the works, which will be interesting.
Oh, wow.
And Batwing number 1, the second printing, and Batwing number 2. Detective Comics number 1 with the Joker's face hanging on the wall by the end will be there. And also Detective number 2.
You'll hopefully see what he looks like without his face.
Oh, I actually loved how they referenced Detective issue number 1 in Suicide Squad issue number 1.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw I thought, hey. And it sort of like it got me going back to read Detective issue number 1 again.
Yeah, well, Green Arrow second printing number 1. I'm sure Ian's going to want one of those. And Green Arrow number 2, Hawk and Dove number 1 second printing, and Hawk and Dove number 2, Huntress number 1. We mentioned that a little earlier. And also Justice League International second printing of number 1 and issue number 2. And to add to that, Pattern Man of War number 1 and number 2, OMAC number 1 and number 2. Another different one is Penguin Pain and Prejudice. Obviously referring to Pride and Prejudice, having their fun with that. Number 1 of 5 will be out. Red Lanterns number 1 second printing, Red Lanterns number 2, Static Shock numbers 1 and 2, Stormwatch numbers 1 and 2, Swamp Things number 1 and 2. Yeah. So that'll be an interesting book. And Sweet Tooth, Jeff Lemire, who does Animal Man, is the book I think to put him on the map is Sweet Tooth. That'll be out as well. Let me just a couple of other things that are coming before we get into the others. We've mentioned some of these books already. Marksman number 3 of 6 will be out.
Thank you.
Red Spike number 5 will be out.
Oh, it's the final issue of Red Spike, issue number 5. It's okay. The finale.
There's also a new Moriarty miniseries.
Yes. That's right. It's an ongoing series, but the new story arc called The Lazarus Tree starts with issue number 5, which also.
I read the trade of that, and I liked it pretty well, so I'm going to keep up with that. Also, Severed number 3 by Scott Snyder is coming out. That's number 3 of 7. Walking Dead number 89, which is always good. And Walking Dead is always terrific. Just a couple others I really want to throw in. I think that the Darkwing Duck trade paperback number 3, that book surprises me how well that sells. So that one is also out. And let's see, Stanley Traveler, number 11, only one more to go of that, unfortunately. The Rince, number 2, will be out, which I'm looking forward to. So anyway, those are the ones that I have in mind. Gianluca, what else do you have as far as like previews goes?
Well, you mentioned Moriarty, Samurai's Blood, and Red Spike. So those were like the titles outside of the DC ones that I had picked. Mm-hmm. I guess if you haven't picked up American Vampire, I know they have the paperback volume 1 coming out also.
An interesting book.
Scott Snyder.
That's right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That particular volume.
I'm on Amazon at the moment, and I'm just ordering Moriarty Volume 1 trade paperback.
Thank you for your support.
I've been wanting to, but I haven't gotten around to it. I've just ordered it.
Cool.
So that's done.
Cool. Very cool. Any other things that Superior number 5 or 6. I mean, Superior number 4, I think, came out in February, so I guess it's a good idea that they put this out once or twice a year. Mr. Miller is very busy with movies and stuff, so he's and I'm sure one of these days, if I ever, he's going to punch me smack in the face, because I always want to call him Millar, which I know he hates. But anyway, that's else what's coming out. Ian, anything else that tickles your fancy this week?
Well, you know, they're not releasing Planet of the Apes issue 7 this week, so I'm probably going to have to try issue 1 and 2 of Swamp Thing, so I can actually get my comics at the end of this week.
Oh, that'd be good.
Because
it is
still going to be free in my box.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Okay.
You know, so I'm going to have to get something else, to, you know, try something else to sort of make up the balance.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anything else of interest for you, Gianluca?
No, not really.
Okay, well, we're going to see. I'm curious to see how these things go. Now that we're going to be into October and the second month, will it be as successful as the first month? Doubtful, but if they can maintain some of the momentum, I think that would be that'll help comic shops and the comics industry as a whole in general. So,
absolutely. And maybe it might increase or stay the same, given the fact that you have the second and third printings go into effect this month, you know, as well.
See, if they've got those second printings coming out, those people who did not get the first issue, we might be able to there's always going to be some drop off. But I think if they can put these issues number 1 out and people come in and didn't get their chance to read those books, maybe some people will go back and pick up those number 1s and fill up some of those gaps.
That's exactly. They always time or most people try to time the second printing of issue 1 to come out the same week as issue 2. And Wayne, I have to say that there will be people who bought those issue 1's first printings that will still go out there and buy the second and third printings regardless.
That's right. Some of them have never cracked those books open, so now they're going to want to see whether they're any good or not, so they might actually buy the second printing to read the thing.
They'll read the third printing.
Yeah. See, that just fascinates me, because I thought this whole business of collecting was finished, and it's not. I mean, you know, people are collecting like mad on these DC books, and so it's.
If you go on eBay, you can find some of these titles on sale for $10.
One of them was $30. Somebody was telling me, I think it was Animal Man number 1, he saw for $30 on eBay.
I got 2 copies. Sealed.
That's right. Okay. All right. Anything else that we should bring up before we call it a news and preview section?
No.
Okay. How about you, Gianluca?
No, that's it.
Then enough is enough. Okay. Thanks, you guys. We'll talk again next week.
And that draws to a close the 30th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. If you'd like to help Ian, Cullen, and me defray our costs, please go to the scifipulse.net website. That's SCIFIPULSE.net website, and you'll see a place in the upper right hand corner where you can make a donation to help us pay for our expenses, and we'd really appreciate any amount. There's nothing too small or too big, so please feel free to help out if you can. Next week I'm going to be speaking with Matt Malero, who's well known for bringing Aqua Teen Hunger Force to Cartoon Network on the Adult Swim. He's got a book coming out from Kickstart, one of my very favorite companies, and it's called Nobodies with a silent K at the beginning. That's coming out by the end of the month, and I think you'll enjoy my talk with him. That's coming next week. So until next time, keep reading your comics.
So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.